From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, documenting life in Honduras with photographer Tomás Ayuso. Over the last year, images of people fleeing from Central America to the U.S.-Mexico border have made their way into the news cycle.
Thousands of migrants make the perilous journey through southern Mexico, hoping to reach the United States. It's been called the largest Central American migrant caravan in decades. And thousands more migrants are joining, fleeing dire conditions in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala.
Many of those images have been made by journalists and photographers who are based in the United States or abroad. And while they do tell a story, some have argued that it might not be the right one about Central America. These images focus on masses of people and on violence and misery, but without a sense of people's individual stories. Tomás Ayuso is a photographer who decided he was going to try to change that by focusing on the people of the country he grew up in, Honduras.
I took it upon myself to start writing, start making stories, and in that process, I figured out why not bring a camera.
And there he began to document the lives of Hondurans on a daily basis, in some cases, even following them as they made the decision to leave the country. The name of his project is called The Right to Grow Old. In this segment of How I Made It, Tomás shares how he met Moisés and Meya. These are two of the people that he documented for his project, and then continued to follow them as they made a decision to make their way to the U.S.-Mexico border.
I wasn't originally going to be a photojournalist or a journalist in any capacity. I was training, so to speak, to be a short arms trafficking analyst, meaning how are weapons going in and out of Latin America, specifically Central America. I went back to Honduras because my work situation didn't pan out. There wasn't a lot of money at the time to fund work visas. And there, I noticed how foreign media, typically from the North Atlantic, was covering Honduras.
As night falls, police and gangs resume their clashes for control of the slums of the Honduran city of San Pedro Sula. In one of the world's most dangerous cities, everyone is a suspect. Some indeed are criminals.
In a very dehumanizing, othering fashion. I mean, fairly blatant, explicit otherization of Honduras. And it bothered me. I was actually born in Guatemala. My father was from there, son of Spanish immigrants. And my mother was born in Honduras, and she is the daughter of Palestinian immigrants. Unfortunately, my father passed very soon after I was born, some 20 days. We went back to Honduras, and therefore, even though I was born in Guatemala, I consider myself Honduran. So the project itself comes around the time that I had this awakening, or rather noticing how dehumanizing the discussion of Honduras from abroad was. It made me decide to tell the stories of Honduras. And in that process, I realized that the people who were dying in this upheaval of violence that peaked around 2015, it was the younger kids. The younger families, the younger individuals would choose to migrate as a direct action to save their lives. It's their way of regaining their right to grow old, the right to life, you know, have an opportunity to live, an opportunity to dream, an opportunity to live in dignity. That in Honduras, these things just for 75% of the population and increasing, unfortunately, has just been struck down. And securing that, if it's either direct action against the state or in refusing the encroaching and advancing allure of criminal groups, or just saying, you know what, the Honduran project failed and as it currently stands, and we're going to find our home wherever that is, because our home was stolen from us. I met Moisés in a very, very, very troubled neighborhood in San Pedro Sula.
We just got word that there was a shooting here in this neighborhood. There's several people who've been shot. There's a huge crowd of people who are looking on at the scene.
And as I spent time with him, I realized that he wasn't just a kid growing up around it. I came to see just the different pressures that no 17-year-old should be living under. The sway and powerful grip that these gangs have. The police brutality of which he was subjected to constantly. Just, there wasn't any future to even contemplate. And when I met him, he was in this point of his life where he was being courted by the groups. He was being oppressed by the police. He was caught in the middle. It was an existential dilemma, really, in the true definition of the word. When I met him, he was choosing what to do. And Maya, who is his partner, found out she was pregnant in the process of me knowing her with Moises' child. And ultimately, that was what triggered him to decide that he isn't just, you know, on this fatalistic solo journey through life. Now he is a father. And together they chose to secure their right to life by choosing to seek asylum together. But goodbye was, for the families, was, as an observer, was very rough. The grandparents of Moises and Maya were weeping openly for the kid, but obviously for their children as well. Moises' siblings couldn't let go of the baby and their brother. There was a deep sense of loss because they don't know when and if they'll ever see each other again. Anything can happen on that journey. There was one moment that really stuck with me when we were in some bus station somewhere in the middle of Guatemala. The bus stopped, a group of a dozen or so Venezuelans and Cubans got on the bus, and they were heading towards the border as well. It was just this moment of just stateless people being bounced around in the midnight highway network of Guatemala as they headed to the border. It was at some highland bus station that we said goodbye. It was very cold. It was several hundred or thousand meters above sea level. So for Maya, at least, this was the first time she ever felt cold. Moises would later told me that Maya cried when I left because it felt this time they were truly on their own. It's like, I really hope they make it. And the impotence of not knowing of whether you can do something or not if they're ever to get in trouble in Mexico. It was looming the whole time until, thankfully, they reemerged at the border.
¿Dónde estamos?
¿Dónde estamos? Welcome to the Pacific.
¿Y eso?
La barda. Estamos en la barda. México, United States, amigo.
Hola, Jimena. Hola,
mira. You spend so much time with these people. They tell you all these specific parts of their lives. They open up to you and tell you these hyper-vulnerable moments and moments of extreme tragedy. And then you spend also times of extreme levity and joy and laugh at, you know, the silliness of life.
Lo voy a decir yo que andamos en las bellas playas de Tijuana, viendo la belleza de aquí, pues, del Pacífico.
I think that the interesting part of doing this work is to try to be a conveyor of this person's complexity. Skipping any step in that regard, I think, is just not doing the job correctly.
Moises and Maya are currently at the U.S.-Mexico border waiting to have their asylum case heard. Tomás Ayuso is a photographer based in Honduras. His project recently won the James Foley Award for conflict reporting. You can see his work, including his project, The Right to Grow Old, on Instagram at Tomás_Ayuso. This episode was produced by Sarah Quevedo with help from Maya Cueva and edited by Sofia Paliza-Ca. The Latino USA team includes Fernanda Camarena, Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Janice Yamoka, with help this week from Ginny Montalvo. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Fernanda Uriegas. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on social media. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
I love sushi. I actually do enjoy cheap sushi.
Celebrity chef Samin Nosrat will not do events anymore if she's the only brown person speaking.
And often, and like I have at the ready list of names, because a lot of times the excuse is like,
couldn't find one.
The stories behind the celebrities. Every Tuesday on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, I sit down for a one-on-one with Senator Bernie Sanders as we continue our coverage of the presidential nominees.
You got all kinds of sexism and racism and a criminal justice system which is broken, an immigration system which is broken. And then, on top of all that, if that's not enough, you got the global crisis of climate change.
That's next time on Latino USA.